Hello, creatives, and welcome to the podcast where we talk to leaders who are working out in the world about how they bring their professional skills and faith together to change the culture. If you have ever been to the official Vatican website or anything else that the Vatican perhaps has put out in the past years, it might have tempted you to despair of good design coming out of the heart of the church. However, there is top-notch work being done out there, and today we are talking to someone who is helping to make it happen. When Matthew Sanders looked at the design coming out of the Vatican, he didn't just critique or groan, he said, "I think I can help." And so he moved across the world to do something about the church's communication problem. Before that, though, Matthew Sanders has served in the military, he then worked at an archdiocese, and now he is the founder and managing director of Longbeard, a digital design agency based in Rome and Toronto. Today, we are talking about what kind of approach we need to take as professional laypeople to help the church's message spread in the world and on the digital continent. We also talk about why there should be more homilies about Captain America. And I've personally worked with Matt as a client in the Longbeard team, and I can testify to his humble Captain America-like leadership. So even though he's Canadian, the guy gets him. Anyway, he puts his words into action, so take heed. This is a huge honor, and we're pumped to have him on the cast. Before we get started, though, we just wanted to take a moment and celebrate with you for a bit about the first group-wide collaboration that we just announced. It's called 8 Beats, and already it's over 80 filmmakers, designers, marketing professionals, and artists from across North America who have rallied to the cry of beauty. And they've been divided into 8 regional teams. Each team will produce and distribute a 5 to 12 minute short film inspired by the themes of the 8 Beatitudes, done at the highest quality possible and distributed with all of the power of modern marketing strategy. Why? We want to build community. So this movement isn't just a Facebook page. It's like-minded people creating deep and lasting relationships with each other. We want to see lifelong friends, professional teams, or partnerships created here. And who knows, even possibly marriages. We wouldn't be Catholic if we didn't want to help people find their vocations, am I right? So this collaboration is an important next step for us in developing real relationships and going beyond the Facebook group. If you're interested in jumping in on one of the teams or getting involved or supporting, you can find out more at www.8beatsmovie.com. That's 8 beats with the number 8. Links in the show notes. As always, create something awesome this week and enjoy the cast. Hi guys, welcome to the Catholic Creatives Podcast. We're super pumped to have you guys all here, and we have an incredibly special guest with us. His name is Matthew Sanders. He is the owner and founder of Longbeard Creative Agency that's doing some amazing work. If you guys have seen, they're doing amazing work in the Vatican, actually, which is very interesting to me and is also something that's a very hopeful development, I think, for the whole church. And I brought him on because after talking to Matthew for a long time, just being, you know, colleagues in this, I've really recognized that, Matthew, you have an amazing vision for what the church could be, and you're really trying to enact change in a dramatic way across the board in the church. So I just want to ask you, before we get into just the, you know, the story of your life and kind of who you are, if you could talk to me a little bit about your vision for the church.
Sure. Anthony, thanks very much for having me on the podcast. And, you know, thanks for everyone involved with the Catholic Creatives Movement. It's been a really exciting thing to observe. Although I haven't been able to be as engaged as I'd like to be, I'm really super excited this organization exists. And I expect some real fruit to come of it. So thank you to everyone who's been investing time in it. Regarding my kind of vision, I mean, I like to think my vision kind of aligns with the church. I think where visions get more interesting is when you start kind of, you know, practically kind of laying those out. So, I mean, if I were to kind of just succinctly say what my vision is, what I would like to see before I die, or at least see it on its way there, would be a church that is the most effective and efficient organization in the world. I think efficiency and effectiveness are things that are talked about in a lot of spheres. And the only time they really come up in a church context is when we're basically pointing fingers and kind of criticizing people. And I think that that's not the way God wants it. And I don't think these things that have come before us, that's the kind of church they were really working to build. I think in many ways that's, you know, the church we have, but it is the way it is because this is the way that we kind of are kind of allowing it to be. And I think if we kind of take responsibility, and I think this has to start at really a grassroots level, and even I would say at a lay level, if we decide that we want to make the church an effective and efficient organization, then I think we can start collaborating and talking and working with the clergy to help bring that reality about.
Amen. And out of everybody that I've known and met, I think that you're probably one of the few that has done that at a very, very high level. So I'm really interested to hear maybe some specific stories about how that has gone for you and how you've gotten to the point of being able to have such influence in creating efficiency at such a high level out even in the Vatican. But before we do that, I'd love to give everyone just kind of a personal connection to you, like who you are, what are you doing right now, and a little bit about your story. So let's just start with when somebody asks you at a cocktail party what you do, what do you tell them?
I'll usually kind of laugh to myself and say, I run a digital media design firm. And I laugh because I know that I'm immediately going to have to explain what the hell that is, right? So I run a design firm and we're kind of focused on digital space. I think I still say that, although the company's kind of evolved into a whole bunch of different things, because that's really at the core of what I'm trying to keep us focused on. I think everything else that we're kind of involved in is really to help our clients get to a certain place where they can work with us on, in that kind of design space most effectively. Mm-hmm. So for instance, graphic design, that was kind of where we started. And then we got more into kind of web development. And then we got into doing strategic and marketing kind of consultation. And then most recently, a technological infrastructure application consulting, which is how we ended up partnering with Google. And that's right now, that tends to be the lion's share of what the consulting work I'm doing in Rome.
Wow, that's amazing. And I definitely want to hear more about that. Could you tell us a little bit about how you got to the point of saying, I want to start a creative agency? Obviously, you weren't always doing that. So what's the story there?
Sure. So the short version would be I was kind of friends with Carl Collins, and I'd been working for the Department of National Defense, and was just coming. Essentially, I kind of lost motivation. So he'd mentioned to me that there was a job opportunity at the Archdiocese of Toronto. I applied for that, and that's how I entered the Archdiocese of Toronto. I started as the executive assistant to the chancellor, and then eventually became the special projects manager. And it was in this role that I was given kind of my first task that it drew heavily on design and kind of marketing to a demographic I really didn't have a whole lot of experience with, and that was youth. And the task was to bring Steubenville conferences to Toronto. So at first I said that I'm the wrong guy for this because I'm an evangelical convert. And the reason is I left the evangelical church. I saw a lot of similarities between what I'd seen in Steubenville. And this was looking for as big time as an outsider. But anyways, they gave me my orders and I snapped my heels together and obeyed. And so I went down to Steubenville to kind of experience one of these conferences. And what I saw blew me away. It was this beautiful meshing of traditional, faithful liturgical celebration with this, you know, this beautiful charismatic worship. And so my heart was really engaged and I was on board with the whole Steubenville thing. But then the issue came, well, how do we convince high school kids this is a cool thing to come to? And a few groups in Toronto had exposure, but for the most part, most of them had it. So this is when I had to start looking at high school students. What are they currently digesting regarding, you know, social media content and digital media design and stuff like that? And I realized, oh my God, the stuff that we were developing internally wasn't anywhere near what we would need to kind of get their attention on a news feed. And I'd say that that's something we struggled with for 2 years. I ran student conference for 2 years, and it was a big success. But I think a lot of that came from just a lot of hard work. I don't think it came so much from the digital marketing and design sphere. And I recognize in my conversations throughout this process that a lot of people were complaining about the same thing, that the church has a great message, has great content. The problem is it just wasn't packaged in such a way that it was getting people's attention. So I thought, well, this is a problem that everyone seems to be experiencing, at least in my network. And it just seemed, well, a lot of secular organizations, major corporations had seemingly done a fairly good job solving this problem. So why can't the church? So I got together some people I knew in the space, some were developers, some were designers, and just kind of said, well, listen, guys, you know, I think this can be fixed. I think we just need to appropriate a strategy called slipstreaming, where we look at the secular agencies and how they approach things and why they're effective, and then essentially taking what we can from that space and then applying it to the church. And so I think I pitched around 10 or 11 people, and I thought maybe one or two may be interested. And in the end, all 10 onboarded.
That's so amazing.
So what I thought would be Longbeard, kind of a small, you know, small firm starting with, you know, small little products for parishes, ended up becoming, you know, a 10-man team. And so our first few clients were fairly large as far as the market goes. And so that kind of shot us into the market a lot faster than we thought at a larger scale. And I think since then, we've just been trying to kind of keep up. Mm-hmm. Keep up with the market.
Yeah. Was I one of those starter clients, or was that like after that?
No, you guys were very soon after our conception. Yeah, for sure. You were one of our first. I think that the idea was pitched in January 2016. I think the company kind of got formed in May of 2016. I left the Archdiocese in August after Steubenville 2016, and you guys came, I think, in October.
Yeah. Yeah, that was super fresh, man. Glad to have been part of that Genesis story, man.
Oh yeah, so you guys were critical to our learning curve. It was a good process to go for. We certainly felt our muscles were definitely a little bit stronger after that experience.
Yeah, man. Just so you guys know, Crossroads Initiative is my dad's agency or organization, not for profit organization, and he's just got a pretty massive website with a lot of content on it. And my brother and I, when we were starting our agency, we're hired as consultants to help structure and hire another agency to do the design on the project. And so we ended up getting connected with Matthew. At this point, Catholic Creatives was not a thing, so we didn't know who else was out there, had no clue about like just anybody who was doing Catholic work. So finding Longbeard was like finding this diamond in the rough, you know, like these guys, nobody knows about them yet, but they're obviously awesome. So we were able to get a pretty amazing deal and then fumble through a lot of lessons together on the way to a complete project.
You guys were very patient clients, and there will be merit in heaven, I'm sure, for that.
Yeah, and you were an incredibly patient and gracious agency owner. So I'm glad that we're all friends after that, man. Which is a good thing. But yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit about your vision for the church being an effective and efficient organization. Like, does that come from personal experiences that you had in the evangelical world or as a military man? Is that where your vision was broadened and drawn from?
You know, I think so. I mean, you know, I started my career in the military, and you know, the thing with the military is when you win or you do something right, you win big. And when you lose, you feel like you lost really big. So I think that was very helpful for me in the future. And also, you know, I came to appreciate the importance of chain of command, having a plan, making sure you follow it, make sure you're paying attention to every detail and such. I think when I left the military, and this is not to say the military always does this right. I mean, just like any organization, it's constantly learning and having to evolve. But just because the consequences for screwing up are so dire, there tends to be a lot more focus and attention on process and stuff. But when I left the military and went to work for, you know, the federal government as a civilian, I realized, in the Army, whereas politics and stuff like that was something that you're always trying to stay away from and run from as much as possible. When I entered into a kind of a political context, I realized how ego and competing agendas and stuff like that, how that gets in the way of efficiency and effectiveness. And so,
can you give some examples?
Yeah, sure. So one of the projects I worked on was organizing the G20 summit that was in Toronto. I think that was in 2012. And I was brought in with a bunch of other contractors to help kind of organize the logistics for the G20 summit. which was a challenge because it was a G20 summit in a downtown in a major city. So there was a lot of security and logistical challenges. But we were working alongside a lot of people that were employees of the federal government. And what we found immediately is us ex-military guys working alongside the public servants, that there was a definite culture. There was a space between the two cultures, which was not easy to bridge. Whereas I think, not to say that we're certainly kind of a rough, gruff group, and I certainly swore, I think, a lot more than they were used to. I think we kind of wanted to get out of brass tacks most of the time, wanted to kind of cut out a lot of the connecting and kind of long-winded getting to know you conversations, whereas that was just kind of part of their modus operandum. And I think even the way we measured success was different. For us, all we really cared about is, at the end of the day, you know, all the buses arriving on time, everyone getting where they need to go, and did it happen safely and securely. Whereas for the federal government, the how it was done was much more important to them. What kind of relationships kind of came out of that process, and were they intact or essentially were they broken or hurt? And so I think working with them was a very kind of healthy thing for me, because I realized that there's more than just getting it done. The how is very important. At the same time, I think that they also realized that discussing, you know, whose name was going to be on the report that's submitted to the boss is not actually as important as, you know, accomplishing something collectively as a team and taking collective responsibility.
Mm, cool. So how did that impact your experiences as you entered into the diocese? Did you find that the diocese was similar to the federal government and that there was a lot of that politicking happening, or was it more goal-oriented?
Yeah. Let me say, disclaimer, I loved working for the Archdiocese. I worked for some amazing people, and they were patient, very patient with me in my shortcomings, and I learned a great deal. But I did become, you know, I think be painfully aware that the church is a political organization like any other, and ego is very much alive there, and it's something you have to factor in when you're strategically trying to get something done. And I think I underestimated that too many times, and I feel like I got my lashes for that, which is good, because I think those scars I carry with me now, and they're good reminders. But I realized that if we really wanted to kind of affect change and make the church more effective, that trying to necessarily do it from the inside may be an incredibly painful and slow process. And I just don't think that I would live long enough to make the impact that I really felt convicted to do. So that's where I felt that I think it'd be best to kind of start an agency which is trying to solve a very particular problem, and then encourage the church to follow suit with what so many private organizations have done, is outsource instead of trying to build the internal assets internally.
Hmm. Could you give some experiences of what like lashings look like when you don't pay attention to the political side of your work?
Sure. I am going to be trying to exercise some prudence here. Sure. When I was trying to working with various parties and putting together Steubenville, mm-hmm. you're working with people who work for the Archdiocese, who work for certain offices, which are certain competencies that you need to rely on to get the event done. You're working with volunteers mm-hmm. who are giving their time and a certain expectations as to what, you know, they'll be able to contribute to the conference. And then you have, you know, those of us, you have essentially all the technical people that are involved in putting on the light show and stuff like that. So I think in dealing with these three very distinct groups, I think one of my problems was just assuming I was dealing with soldiers here, and that once we came up with a plan, mm-hmm. executing it would be a problem. And so I realized, in doing so, I think I wasn't as tactful and as sensitive to certain people as I should have been. I didn't factor in personal considerations that I think was just kind of expected of me. And because of that, I think things didn't go as smoothly as they could have if I was a little bit more enlightened and well-formed person.
Mm, yeah.
But having said that, I give a lot of credit to the people I did work with, because I think they recognized where I came from, or they did eventually. Mm-hmm. And so that they showed me a lot of charity and patience, and then we all got there together and did something really beautiful. So, as much as I think I rightfully took some lashes for being imprudent and unwise. I also experienced a lot of charity and love from people. And I think if I hadn't ever received that, I think I would have left the process of a very kind of bitter person.
And mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you decided to move outside of the diocese to affect change inside, I'm wondering how you use design as a design agency to affect change within the church. How is that happening for you now that you guys have a little bit more traction and are working there out in the Vatican?
Anyone who works with the church or spent time in it knows that there's a ton of organizations in the church, whether they are directly fall under the church hierarchy or organizations that are actually run by dioceses or just nonprofit type NGOs which have a Catholic orientation. There's tons of people trying to do good. I think the issue is they have difficulty onboarding people. Which I think is necessary for them to be effective. And I think a lot of that comes down to people just don't know what they're doing. And it's understandable. If where are people at? People are at, as we all know, they're on their mobile phones and they're checking their news feeds and they're being bombarded with messaging and asks from a ton of people. And so here's a church organization trying to get the word out about what it's doing, and it finds itself, a drop in the ocean. It's one post amongst a lot, a news feed of thousands. So, and the issue is a lot of times the images they're using, the creative that they're coming out with to get people's attention is just 10, 15 years old. Again, which everyone in Catholic Creatives appreciates, mm-hmm. which is why you guys, I think, started this movement. So I think it's really about a megaphone, right? If you think of it like a public square, or if you go back to the Paul's time when he used to, walk into a town center in Athens, and you got a bunch of people on top of milk stands, selling and preaching and such. And if you imagine that square, you got like the Googles and you got the Star Wars, and they got these huge ass milk stands with these totally stoked out magnaphones and such. And then you have the church and this humble soapbox preaching its message. It's a beautiful message, but nobody can hear it amongst all the noise. And so I think mm-hmm. what I wanted to do with Longbeard was simply help build a bigger milk stand or whatever and give them a bigger microphone.
Right. Have you found, though, that in handing microphones to organizations that you've also had to give them coaching on what they should say or how they should say it? One of the reasons why I'm bringing it up is because you said that you think that working from the outside is going to be more helpful for making change happen in organizations in the church rather than working from the inside. But if their insides aren't really fixed, then how do you work from the outside to help them design and give them a microphone if their insides aren't fixed, right? So
right.
That's more of the question.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is helping them realize what they can realistically accomplish inside and what they should by necessity outsource. And I think right. The church doesn't have to figure this out. I think the church has to pay attention to organizations that actually have this conversation a lot and who've gone through a very thoughtful and logical process and figure out how do they divide those spheres. So in my opinion, digital media design, creative marketing, technological consulting, technology itself, are things that are better handled by the private sector, by groups that are entirely focused on that one thing and are highly exceptional at it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the church, what it should be doing is essentially doing ministry and facilitating that ministry and then drawing on the tools and experience of lay people, I think, for the most part, who do this for a living. So that's kind of the drum I bang a lot here in Rome. And what I'm really trying to encourage them to do is to recognize that their needs are no different than a lot of organizations. The market may be different, but the needs are the same, and that they should go to the best organizations in the world to have those needs met, as opposed to trying to make themselves into one of the best organizations in the world, which is unrealistic.
Right. So rather than trying to make their own internal awesome digital marketing branch, being willing to say, hey, this is not our expertise, let's go ahead and outsource this to an agency like Longbeard that really is hiring the best in the world to do this.
Right. And this is an important point I'll be careful saying this, but if you try and grow your internal staff, there is a moral responsibility to that staff. And if anyone who's worked in the Vatican will tell you, I mean, nobody gets fired here. And that's a big problem. And a lot of the reasons you'll hear is, well, that's a mercy thing. But I think that kind of explanation comes from a very perverted sense of mercy. I mean, my opinion, it's a question of the sheep and the shepherds. The shepherds, I think, are here to serve the sheep. When the shepherds become more concerned about how the shepherds are regarding each other, or about, you know, their way of life or their comfort of living, then the sheep suffer. So to me, acknowledging that somebody's gifts are not being utilized effectively, at the Vatican,
mm-hmm.
and encouraging them to go find a place where their gifts will be utilized, and that maybe outside of the Vatican is not a lack of charity. That I think it is in fact charity. And so my point is this: I think when you try and build a team of creatives or developers, what ends up happening inevitably internally is you end up stretching them. They end up having to wear 10 hats, which can be frustrating for them and very challenging. And what ends up happening is it becomes inherently inefficient and ineffective, because they're spending, you know, twice as much time doing a task because they only do it, you know, once every 3.5 weeks. Whereas I think if they acknowledge their need and took it to an agency, that's essentially what they do day in, day out. They're highly efficient at it and can turn it around quickly. What they're again finding is that they're actually able to provide a much, much better service to the sheep. And I think the sheep in turn, which I think we could say is the lay faithful, I think will reward that, you know, with greater faith and confidence, and I think with even financial resources.
Yeah. Can you tell me of some experiences where you've actually had to have these kinds of conversations with organizations? You don't have to say their names, but where they've either responded positively or negatively to that message, and you've had to really work through it to make the change or make the organization accept your counsel?
Sure. Yeah. So there, when we came to the Vatican, what I find is most of our clients, I think, are in a very similar place. They recognize the world is changing. It's a digital, the future is very much digital. And mm-hmm. what they're trying to do is figure out how do they tool themselves to address that reality. So the thing is, all of them know they have to add assets or to bring in capacities in order to be more effective in this space. So some organizations, I'm thinking one in particular, had some assets in place, but they weren't very effective, essentially, in challenging the organization to become more effective. They weren't keeping up on the technology. They weren't readily engaging other companies that have more advanced technological solutions, encouraging them to come to the table to make pitches and such. And because these people were not challenging the organization, the organization stagnated. And so what they needed to do, they recognized that this is partially because the person was educated in a certain technological time where things are very different. And they just, because they have a family or whatever else, they just haven't had the time to invest in keeping up on things. So this is a good person with good intentions, but they just don't have the qualifications and skills needed to bring about kind of an internal revolution. So what they did is they started saying, okay, well, we don't have the internal assets. Is there some people that we could bring in from the outside, from a third party, who could come and help educate, inform this person as to kind of where technology is heading, and then essentially equip them to then essentially take the ball and run with it internally. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's a difficult process, and it's one in which you have to exercise a lot of patience, because it can be very hard for someone to go through that process. Essentially, it's kind of acknowledging that things are going to change, and the competencies and procedures that you become very comfortable with are essentially going to be gone, and you're essentially going to be starting kind of anew. But what we found is there's that initial period, which is very tough. But once they start learning and they start realizing how much these technologies are going to help them in their own workflows, and how it's going to help the entire organization to be more effective, they start getting energized. And I think I've been seeing that energy is carried through the staff, and it's giving them the momentum they need to move forward.
Right. So in this situation, the organization that you were talking about already knew that there was a problem and wanted you guys to help equip their internal marketing staff to better approach doing digital marketing, right?
Correct. I think most of the clients that we deal with, they know that they have to change. They know there's something wrong and that they need to be better. The problem is always the question of how. And I think that that's what we kind of specialize in is we're not the what and the why people so much. We're the how people. And so when people know the right questions, we like to think that we have, you know, some of the right answers. But if they're not asking the right questions, usually we tend to put a little bit of space between us, because those are internal processes, and coming to those questions are important, and they need to kind of go through those in their own time. And until they're asking, there's no point trying to knock on the door, because they won't be ready for you.
Right. So do you find that most of these organizations are really much more comfortable with like hiring their own internal staff, and that it's harder to get them to be willing to outsource? And if so, why is that fear there?
Well, I think it depends kind of who you're talking to within the organizations. I think for the most part, the decision makers, what they want is results. They don't care so much about how they get them. At least the ones that I think are a little bit more forward thinking or kind of raised or formed in a context we would know in the West. I think what happens, particularly in the church, is they feel a sense of responsibility and charity for their staff, so that they don't want to make necessarily some hard decisions to let people go. So that they want to essentially bring everybody with them into this new phase. I haven't found a single client who didn't make a significant effort to do that. The issue is, at what point do you bring in the third party help? And what kind of role are they going to play in essentially creating this new office? One of our clients here, which was really exciting, before this particular organization was even started formally, they contacted us and said, listen, if you were to create an ideal modern dicastery at the Holy See, how would you do it? And I didn't understand what they meant. I was kind of confused. I'm like, I don't understand what you're asking me. Are you asking me if I was in the Vatican, working within the Vatican, infrastructure, as I understand it, how would I go about navigating those waters? Because if so, I don't know how to answer that. And they said, no, forget that. You're creating a new dicastery, and you can do whatever you want to do. Utilize any technologies you want. Hire whoever you want to build an ideal dicastery. How would you do it? So
what does that word mean?
The dicastery?
Yeah. Well, it's a dicastery.
Yeah. It'd be kind of like the typical Council for Justice and Peace before it became Integral Human Development. That would be a dicastery. It'd basically be like an organization within a company.
Mm-hmm.
And so that presented a really exciting opportunity. And so what I went about kind of laying out what I thought that would look like. And what shocked me is they said, okay, well, let's do that. And that was, I think, for me, the first time I think I dealt with a client that actually was willing to do whatever it took, because their mission, which they've been given, from the Holy Father, was so important to them. The sheep were so important to them in affecting results that they were willing to do whatever it takes to see those results and effects take place. And so that's what kind of got me fired up and kind of made me realize that actually change here is possible. Mm-hmm. You just have to recognize it's going to be slow going.
Right. So have you had to counsel anyone to let people go?
I have recommended, I've been asked point blank, is this someone that you think is working that can be retooled? I tend to not like to answer those questions because I tend to come in and out of organizations, and I don't feel that I really have a really good working sense of what their real potential is. The question has been asked before. Yes.
Right. I guess I just, in seeing this problem of the church wanting to hold on to people, man, it is a lot slower, right, to retool and re-educate someone if it's not their gifting or proficiency to do this kind of thing than it is to find people who are already proficient in it and have like studied this and made it the focus of their life and their vocation, right? So that's a much slower and more difficult process to come in as the agency to totally like re-educate and retool a underperforming staff. I mean, is that something that you find challenging often as you're consulting out there?
Yeah, it is. And it's something that it's something that I don't think I can ever take it too seriously. I mean, these people have good intentions, and I mean, I've never come across anyone here that didn't want to do good or to help this section accomplish its mission.
Right.
It's just simply a question of tooling and experience. And I think there's some of those things I think you can fix, and sometimes I think you can, sometimes I just don't think you can. And so I think for every person, it's going to help with helping them to honestly go through a process of internal evaluation and honesty and admitting what they feel capable of doing, what they don't. And, mm-hmm. and then essentially once they kind of gone through that process, making sure that they speak to their superiors and either they're directed to a place where they think their skills and their energies would be more effectively, more efficiently, or they find a different organization outside of the Holy See or whatever organization it may be.
Right.
Or they retire, you know, or they put in, you know, decades and decades of service to a particular organization or the church. And maybe it's time just to acknowledge that a new generation has to come up and kind of take the reins. Right. I think there's a humility in that. And I think, you know, mm-hmm. Pope Benedict set a very good example in that regard.
Right. Yeah. So at the USCCB Bishops Convocation this last weekend, Patrick Lencioni gave a really fantastic talk where he was pointing out that one of the reasons why church organizations tend to be more unhealthy than a lot of other ones is just that they tend to hire people who are very nice, right? Like most of the people that Right. want to work for the church tend to have an incredible desire to see others happy. But oftentimes what comes with that is a fear of conversations that are hard, or like a Right. conflict that would bring about displeasure, discomfort, or even people not liking you, right?
Right.
So it ends up becoming organizations end up becoming this echo chamber where subtle subtext becomes the way that conflict comes out. And that's very unhealthy. And we don't actually end up really having the hard conversations that need to be had. But then I loved something that he brought out that I think was just probably paradigm shifting for a lot of people. And it was for me when I first heard him, you know, this corporate guy talking about conflict. And his perspective is just that the only way to facilitate real healthy conflict on a team is to have vulnerable trust, a really strong base of vulnerable trust, to be able to handle bringing something scary out to the surface. And rather that than having this kind of like cutthroat corporate, like we just need to say the hard things and not care about feelings right. perspective. It's like literally the opposite. It's like make sure that everyone's feelings are really present and acknowledged, and make sure people feel able to talk about their feelings, you know, like that's intense. And I'm wondering how, as a design firm and agency, you guys are able to create enough vulnerable trust with your relationships with your clients, with your clients' relationships with their teams, through your processes, to be able to have these harder conversations.
Right. I think in my time in the Army, one thing I became painfully aware of, it was the importance of humble leaders. Mm. And I think the problems with the church, and again, there's no single problem, but I think one of the major problems and impediments to it kind of moving forward and becoming more efficient and effective is leadership. Mm-hmm. There just isn't a lot of really well-formed leaders in the church. A well-formed leader can help nurture a team that can be vulnerable with each other, because they model that to the rest of the team. They themselves are willing to set that example and to demonstrate to those who work for them that they trust them enough to be vulnerable with them, to acknowledge that they have certain gifts and abilities, and they have areas that they're weak, and that they need their team to step up and help them in the areas they're weak. And to acknowledge that hopefully their strength will help them collectively accomplish what they want to accomplish as a team. And that's something that I think has to be addressed right away. And I think it has to be done strategically and from the very top. Mm-hmm. We have to perpetuate a culture of leaders. We have to actively form leaders. And we have to draw on this incredible tradition and history we have in the church of leaders. We need to study it. And we need in our seminaries, in Catholic universities, you're working to form leadership, to cultivate leadership, then to form leaders. If we don't do that, what's going to end up happening is we're going to focus on process, and that process is going to be this wheel that's constantly spinning, but there's never any ground being made. The leaders are the ones who drive forward and provide the vision. If you don't have that, I don't think we're going to get anywhere. I think that's one of the problems. That's how mm-hmm. I feel sometimes, that the church is in the world and it's this wheel that's just spinning, but we're not actually making any ground. And I think it's partially because in the seminaries themselves, the seminaries are not properly effectively trained to be leaders. And I think, and I fault the laity. I think the leaders that are amongst the laity who very much love their faith are not stepping up and offering appropriate guidance to their bishops, to their priests, and partnering with them on getting things done.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely testify to the reality of you operating out of a place of humble leadership as one of your past clients. Man, like, both of us made many mistakes when we were working on that project. And it was really great. It was a bigger project than I think either of us had gotten to really like have our hands on at that point. And when we made mistakes, I was always so honored by the way that you took, even for more than was actually your responsibility. You know, like, you were always willing to take the hit and to say, hey, we made a mistake. This wasn't something that we were like really anticipating and didn't know about it. And so we're going to help you guys out. And I just think that the way that you approached those conversations that were often really hard conflicts where there was a lot riding on them with me and with my dad definitely created a sense of trust. I was like, yeah, this guy, he's a really good guy. You know, like, whatever happens in this project, like, I know we're going to be able to figure it out because Matt's a humble leader, you know, and a strong leader for his own team. So,
well, thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it. I mean, listen, man, I still have a lot to learn. running a creative agency and you know, coordinating Catholic creatives, it's one of those things. I don't know. I feel vanity and arrogance, particularly for people that tend to think that they're right more than they're wrong, is a constant struggle. But I think one of the reasons we've been successful is because we picked our clients well, like yourselves and your dad, people who are honest and with integrity and said what they felt and explained very clearly where they're at, which helped breed clarity into the relationship. So they were honest and we were able to be honest in turn. And I think amongst my team, what I love about them so much, and I think the only reason we're able to get as far as we have is because they've taken a sense of responsibility and they have appreciated and identified the areas where where I'm weak, and they've helped me in the areas where I may have been coming apart or I may have been, you know, and a lot of times taking on too much. They've been willing to step up and help carry that load.
Yeah.
So I think I've been very fortunate and blessed in that regard. And I think anybody who's looking to start an agency, or already has one, would appreciate that. I think it's really recognizing and finding people who care first and foremost, like the mission. They have to know why they're there and what they want to do with their gifts, but also respect the person who's leading it and recognize that he's a human being who's going to need their help. And I think that's critical to any kind of organizational success.
Right. What were some of the ways that you led humbly with your own team? Like, I'd love to hear a couple stories or moments where you had to have that kind of conversation internally.
Well, I think one of the most more recent ones is, you know, just recently, I think we kind of crossed kind of a threshold. And there was so many projects being managed that there were so many tasks up in the air and so many clients that I couldn't keep track of them all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the first time in the company where I felt like I was actually losing control or didn't have a handle on things anymore. And this is something that I brought to the team. And I think everyone kind of collectively kind of stood up and said, well, listen, we can all kind of, you know, shoulder that. But then somebody said, well, why don't we get a project manager? At first, I was kind of like, where am I going to find a project manager I could trust who I could delegate, you know, responsibility for these important client relationships, these projects? I just didn't think it was possible. But the more I reflected upon it, I realized that there was real wisdom in that. And then my reluctance was really just, I think, my own arrogance, just thinking that nobody could manage it the way I could manage it, and I just won't accept anyone managing it the way any less than I could, and that was arrogance. And so we went out and we hired a project manager, and she's incredibly effective and efficient, And so I was wrong. And the person who kind of boldly kind of stood up and defied the team and made the case showed a lot of courage, and they were right. So that was one example where I had to kind of concede and relent to the greater wisdom of an individual team member. And against even what was astonishing is the entire team was kind of united in a certain course of action, but one person managed to move the whole organization in a direction which has now benefited us all.
How did you respond after? Like, did you go to the team and say, actually, I think this person, Jack was totally right, like, in this, and I was wrong, so let's hire? Like, how did you communicate that organizationally to the team?
Well, I think what it was is the problem was put out there, and my own limitations were kind of acknowledged, and there was this consensus that, which included myself, that we should just try to, amongst the managers and the team, we should just try and shoulder the PM responsibilities and distribute it.
Yeah.
And then when this person came up and said, well, hang on, guys, I don't think you guys should be doing that. I think a product manager is actually a job that a lot of agencies have, and that there's a reason for it to exist. And it's not something that management should be doing. Anyways, the way they made their case is, I think all of us just kind of stopped and we're just kind of shocked that we hadn't actually fully appreciated or seen that this is something that longer needed, that we had grown up to the point where we need to be like other agencies and have a product manager. So I think there was this kind of long sullen silence, and then someone agreed, and then I essentially said that that's a good point. Let's take some time and think about it. And I think when we all stepped away and came back, I think we all come to the same conclusion that this person was right. This is something we needed to do. So we collectively had to thank that person. And I think that was a good process for us as a team to go through, because what's important for me in the organization is that everybody should feel that their insights can actually move the organization, that they may be right and we all may be wrong. And they should feel the confidence to say when they feel convicted that they are right.
Man, yes. There's so much goodness to that, man. I'm just like celebrating that. Well, dude, I know that we're kind of hitting on time here. The last question would just be, are there any books or places for people to get educated on as major insights that you've learned or things that you've really appreciated as you've grown professionally that you use a lot and that you would recommend other people check out and read? Could be podcasts, could be videos, resources, books, whatever.
Sure. I'm actually a big fan of film in TV. And I think some people initially kind of laugh at me about that, but I think it's important to pay attention to the good programs that a lot of people are paying attention to. And the reason is, I think there's actually a lot of Christian insight and wisdom in a lot of shows that we may not think that there may be. And I think it's important for us as Catholics to recognize and see that wisdom and those Christian kind of insights and truths, and to tease them out of those movies, of those television shows, and to share them with other people who have seen them. For instance, the Marvel series, right, that has been coming out. I mean, you could take Captain America: Civil War. I did a presentation to the Jesuit communication directors, and I basically focused a lot of my talk on this. I mean, I felt
this is awesome.
the conflict between Iron Man and Captain America was really the conflict within America itself, and it's a very, very important conflict that needs to be teased out and discussed. There's two different people who both want the same thing, and both of them have come to the conclusion based upon their own life experiences what the best way to proceed is. Captain America has been a good guy. Started off is someone who was very weak and then became very strong, but he always had a great sense of humility and knew the risks of power because he'd been on the receiving end of that. And so he trusted himself because he, growing up in World War II and fighting the Nazis, he saw the evil that could come about through organized institutions. And so he therefore, he had more trust in himself than he did the institutions. And so then he guides his way of life by means of his conscience. And then you have Iron Man, who's a man who lived his life fairly recklessly, living for himself, and doesn't trust himself. And so he feels that the need to have organizations, to have structures, to adhere to organizations like the UN, to have them kind of make the decisions, and then he follows like a good soldier. But that really comes from his own personal experiences, his own inner issues. Both of those courses of action are not necessarily wrong, which is why they're highly divisive. but they're very, very important. And I think that Christianity has a lot to say about each one of those perspectives. And I think the great irony between those two characters is somewhere in the middle is the proper place. And I think that's where the church is the organization to help kind of chart the issues and the conflicts of the 21st century. It's because we understand that middle, what that middle is, better than anybody else. And so when we see those conversations going on in popular media, we should not be afraid to engage those, to tease them up, to bring them up in homilies, to organize, you know, nights and socials, to do podcasts and talk about them. Because again, if we spend all of our time talking about the Bible, which nobody reads, I think we're going to have a hard time getting people's attention. If we start talking about the things people are already talking about or engaged with, like the Marvel series, I think we're going to find our audience is going to increase pretty quick. And I think Father Barron's been a good example of that.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. I would also recommend The Walking Dead for anybody that is able to handle gratuitous violence, because, man, they also have some incredible moral dilemmas and beautiful redemptive moments and characters, and are just willing to go into the depths of people's humanity and then and sin and darkness, and then to put them in positions where they have to change, which is, I think, very closely related to the Christian walk. So that's one of my show suggestions. But with all of that said, Matthew, we're so pumped about what you're doing out there in the Holy See and really, really want to be cheerleaders for you. Is there anything that we can do as a community to support you guys? Any place where we can find more about what you're doing and kind of spread the word about it?
Well, I think the biggest thing that you guys are already doing is you're providing forums to kind of share your own experiences. Mm-hmm. And I think what's going to be powerful is I've seen your guys' network growing, and I've seen more and more of church leaders kind of get engaged with your group. I think the Catholic Creatives Group, what I hope for it more than anything else, is that it would be an incredibly powerful influencer force. Mm-hmm. Within the American church, up right to the very top, because I think the church needs lay leadership. Mm-hmm. It needs the brilliance and expertise of lay leaders, and I think what the team, the people that you guys have brought together, are exactly that. And I think the church has to acknowledge that if it really wants to move forward into the 21st century, be effective, it's going to rely on people like those in the Catholic Creative. So I would just keep saying, keep inviting as many people as you can to the table. Keep organizing events and talking. And if there's anything that we can do in Rome to celebrate your guys' events or to engage, you know, please let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can fly me out and put me up in Rome anytime. I'd love to have that kind of support.
You and the whole movie.
Indeed. Anyway, man, so grateful for what you're doing for the church, and looking forward to everything else, all the fruit that's going to be coming from your labors in the next couple of years. It's been amazing to watch your meteoric rise and even to play a small role in that. So God bless, man, and we'll be praying for you.
God bless. Thanks a lot, Anthony. Take care.
In 2016, we issued a call to creatives, entrepreneurs, designers, and artists from all over the continent to come together in Dallas, because we believed that the time was right for a new renaissance to take place in the church. 85 of the most talented young Catholic leaders in the Americas answered the call, coming together because of this shared vision. And what took place at that summit was a flowering of community that was beyond description. And it is now clear that new Da Vinci's, Mozart's, Michelangelo's, Beethoven's, and Medici's are being brought together to blaze new trails for the gospel, to build new businesses, ministries, and works of art that will be catalysts for massive culture change. And if you are listening to this, then you have also answered this call, and we are so grateful for your participation in this movement. If you want to hear more from the speakers, participate in monthly professional development webinars, and be publicly represented on the Catholic Creatives website, you can make this happen by supporting us on Patreon. Your support and your commitment are vital for the growth and mission of Catholic Creatives. And the rewards are awesome. So your help means everyone can benefit even more from our community this year as we sponsor our creative projects and plan next year's summit. The time is right for a new renaissance, a counterwave of beauty. Our world needs aesthetically and philosophically articulate leaders, artists, creatives, and risk takers. Our world needs you. We'll look forward to hearing more from you in the community on Facebook and Slack, and at the regional meetups and at the summit.
We'll see you there.